This is Coast Community Radio, KMUN Astoria, 91.9 FM, KTCB Tillamook, 89.5, and streaming live on the internet at coastradio.org. Stay tuned now as we explore the human beat.
The Clothesline Project started in 1990 in Cape Cod, Massachusetts, as a result of a woman who is no longer here due to abuse. And the community rose up, and what they decided to do was to air their dirty laundry. And the dirty laundry is domestic violence, because it is happening everywhere in every community, no matter race, class, religion, ethnicity, it doesn't matter. And the statistics are constant over the last 20 years. So airing your dirty laundry, talking about domestic violence, and putting on a t-shirt is very profound because it's so simple. You draw and you express yourself on t-shirts and you hang them up in a community with other people. And that's what we've done.
That was Mindy Stokes, women's studies instructor at Clatsop Community College, speaking at the opening ceremony for the Clothesline Project. The featured speaker at the event was Margaret Frimuth, director of the Lives in Transition program. And we're going to hear from her as well, along with some of the women who painted the t-shirts. In the weeks before the opening of the Clothesline Project, we talked with the women as they worked on the shirts, using them to tell their stories and to express what is often hard to put into words.
My shirt's going to say there is no exception. Violence is never acceptable. Because I think sometimes people think that it's okay to get mad and lash out, and it's just, well, you know, I was mad and I lost my temper and I'm human. But it's never okay, because there's always a victim. And it, you know, I grew up in a very violent home, and all we can do is do better by our children for future generations.
I can hear in your voice that this, that doing this has meaning for you, has a lot of meaning.
Very much so. This is claiming my voice. This is speaking up. Because there are so many people who don't have a voice. There are people who aren't alive to tell their story. And it's sad because the statistics are horrifying. And I don't think that many people really understand that. You know, I didn't realize the gravity of the situation and how far-reaching that violence went. You know, it doesn't have any boundaries. It doesn't care if you're black or white or Asian, or it doesn't care. There's situations when it's men and women and children and old people, and it has to stop.
What would you like people to kind of come away with after they have seen these shirts? The shirts will be on display. People will be able to look at them. And I think, you know, some people will look at them and wonder about them, wonder what they mean. What would you like them to get out of it?
I hope that they never forget, and that they are never afraid to speak out. Because, I mean, I've seen children abused in grocery stores and, you know, women beaten in parking lots, and people will stand by silently, and it's not okay, because this is our chance to speak up, and if you don't speak up, you're part of the problem.
I'm painting a shirt in honor of my sister, because she went through a lot of hard times, and she became like a broken child because of it. The men took advantage of her, and it just... I'm doing this because it, I like having a voice, and this is not a right thing for it to happen to people. And a lot of people get away with doing this to women, and it's not right, men, women, whichever. And I don't understand how can they get away. And this is a great way to voice your opinion and your hurt and whatever you really need to.
Now, how does this let you express yourself in a way that you couldn't otherwise?
Well, I'm an artistic person, and so I see more of expressing myself instead of not exactly in words, but better in expression of drawing, expression of painting, expression of just art in general.
And some of the stuff is just hard to talk about.
It is. Sometimes you literally have to paint a picture. So that's kind of what I'm doing.
Well, what does your shirt say?
It says, every day at school, I would look at my past in the face. So it's showing what I had to endure before that person left and I went to a different school. So every day I would have to kind of get flashbacks and disassociate myself from the moment that bad stuff happened.
A recent United Nations report states that at least one out of every three, let me say that again, one out of every three women worldwide has been beaten, coerced into sex, or otherwise abused in her lifetime. 22% or more of all women in the U.S. are physically abused by their male partners or ex-partners. For women aged 15 to 44, violence is a major cause of death and disability. Rape and domestic violence rates higher than cancer, motor vehicle accidents, war, and malaria combined. One in five women worldwide will be a victim of rape or attempted rape in her lifetime. Another United Nations report states that 5 to 10% of all girls and up to 5% of boys suffer from penetrative sexual abuse before they reach age 18. Those percentages triple when multiple forms of sexual abuse are included in the statistics. That's 15 to 30% of all girls and up to 15% of all boys. A World Health Organization report states that as many as 1.8 million children will be used in prostitution and pornography, and that 1.2 million children are victims of human trafficking. This was in the year 2000. I'm sure it's more now. The majority of victims are female. In the United States, a 2005 report from the Center for Disease Control and Prevention suggests that one in four girls and up to one in six boys will be sexually abused by the time they reach age 18. The U.S. Department of Justice states that one-fifth of the nation's children experience sexual solicitation while on the Internet. And that was from 2000. I'm sure it's up now. And statistically, most of the perpetrators are men.
My husband said I was making a fat people's dinner. It was green salad with lots of extras put in. I spent 2 hours chopping vegetables and fried chicken and rice. And that was a fat people's dinner. But
and that made him angry?
Very angry. And it took him 2 to 3 hours to express this. And that was just a piece of one day, one time.
And by express this, you mean expressing this on your...
To tell somebody, is this a fat people's dinner? I was questioning. He was 8 years older and extremely smart and very brutal. He had a life, too. He watched his mother try to shoot the dad. The gun was empty. I mean, it was way more acceptable back before. Yeah. And I was unsure of my ground when I was with him because I didn't know how far I was supposed to be putting up with.
Yeah.
I don't know. I do now. I had no idea. And they find the average they have to leave is 8 times before they'll stay gone. And you know what? I would attest to that. I had to leave several times before I got to say it's done. Because they're so nice, and they promise not to ever do it again. And
the statistic I read recently that was just startling was that during the Vietnam War, I guess almost as many women were killed in the United States by men who supposedly loved them as troops were killed in Vietnam during that same period of time.
That is true. That's a statistic that's on the Clothesline Project's website, I think.
I think that may be where I pick it up, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And yet we don't talk about that. We don't talk about how domestic violence is at epidemic levels and that. I refer to as domestic violence as domestic terrorism. Mm-hmm. If half of all relationships experience domestic violence, and 95% of domestic violence is perpetrated by men onto women, yet this is not a discussion that is being had. You know, usually when you hear when a woman is battered or murdered by her male partner, you hear things like, well, why didn't she leave? Or, you know, she must have liked it. Or there's never this discussion of why does he batter? And yet we're at risk simply by our gender.
It is confusing for people when a woman is in a situation like that, mm-hmm. and she does go back to him, but mm-hmm. but not understanding what the totality of the situation is and, mm-hmm. and her fears and so on. You can't really understand that.
Right. What they know is that the psychology of a woman in a domestic violence situation, a relationship, is the same as a prisoner of war. That type of what's happening in the brain is the same.
And we've heard story about prisoners of war sort of bonding with their captors in a way.
Right, yeah. Right. So, I mean, if the person who says that they love you is assaulting you, and you have to understand that domestic violence is far more than battering. So what I know and what I know by talking to victims of domestic violence is that there's this constant fear of when can the battering happen again? When is it going to happen again? Will my kids be taken away? Is my job at risk? Will I be able to support my children? So there's this relentless assault on someone's self-esteem, on their reality, because most often what happens is the perpetrator makes himself omnipotent.
Right.
So, you know, just imagine if someone is battering you and you think that this person who's battering you is this all-powerful person who could possibly know everything that's even going through my mind.
Right. It is also controlling all the money and controlling all of your resources and so on.
Mm-hmm. What we know regarding violence against women and girls is that the U.S. really is no different than any other country in some respects. We tend to think that we are liberated, and the truth is we do have access to more resources today than we did, like my mom's generation. And we can vote now, but I think what people don't understand is that the United Nations, they report that 1 in 3 women around the world will be subject to violence in her lifetime by the men in her life. And that is the exact same statistic for women in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
1 in 4 women will be raped in her lifetime in the United States, and 80% of those rapes are by men that you know. That rape is 99% of rapes are done to women. It's a very gender-specific crime.
Mm-hmm.
And that when we talk about violence, these are crimes. It's not someone that, it's not someone just exploding and blowing off steam and you know, losing it and having a bad day. That domestic violence really makes up an entire spectrum of behaviors, and it's about having power and control and making sure that you you don't lose that power and control, and manipulating your victim so that you don't lose it.
Mm-hmm.
What research shows is that men stop battering when they know they're going to get in trouble and when their covers are pulled.
Is your sense that we're doing any better job now than we were, say, 20 or 30 years ago at taking violence against women seriously and prosecuting the abusers and so on, or are we still kind of turning our faces away from it?
I think it's both. These discussions are happening, but I don't see them happening on the greater campus here. They're happening in my women's studies classroom and in the lives in transition class. But whenever I tell people the statistics, they're blown away. How can that be? And that's because they've never been introduced to the information. You know, and we see violence against women and girls everywhere we turn, in music videos. You go to Safeway and look at the magazines in the aisle when you're standing to pay for your groceries. This sexualized violence against women is ubiquitous in our culture, in pop culture. So it's better in that we talk about it, we have a language for it. In some states, like Oregon, someone has to be arrested, I believe, if a call has been made. Mm-hmm. And here's an aside. Did you know that every time a marriage certificate is purchased here in the state of Oregon, something like $25 of that marriage certificate will go to programs that stop violence against women? So what does that tell you about the state of marriage? It's disturbing, isn't it?
It's disturbing.
Yes.
Bet, yeah.
Yeah. And so... there's a language for it, and again, that was born out of the second wave feminist movement. We didn't even have a term, sexual harassment, until it was coined. We didn't have battered women shelters until women pushed for that. But if you just look at the U.S. statistics, things have not changed in the last 20 years. We still see violence against women at epidemic levels. And here is the really important piece to get, and this is what I tell my students. That we've been told to beware of stranger danger, mm-hmm. that the people who are going to attack us are strangers, and yet the violence is happening in the home by the people that we love and that say that they love us. And again, if 80% of rapes are date rapes and by people that we know, we really have to look at what's happening inside houses and in relationships, intimate partner relationships that... sure, as a woman, I need to watch my back as I'm walking down the street, but really, I might have to watch my back when I enter my home, and that's where the violence is happening.
I'm not very artistically creative, so I wrote this poem the other day, randomly, so I decided just to put that on there.
And what inspires the poem?
I just got a divorce about a year ago. I left a really abusive man, so... it's kind of the whole last year of my life completely changed. I was really afraid to leave him. He was a Coast Guard guy, and I had my kids and the perfect life, I thought, so I didn't want to walk away from that. And a lot of people... gave me a lot of courage to leave. So, and I left with nothing, and I went to live in a homeless shelter for like 4 months. And
does doing this enable you to say things that are kind of hard to say otherwise?
Yeah, it's really hard to say it because there's so much judgment in that situation. And even after you leave, you know, I got judged a lot from having a beautiful house and a beautiful car, and everybody thought I had this perfect, picture-perfect life. And after leaving... it was, you know, why did you leave that? Now you have your kids in a homeless shelter and you're struggling and stuff. And it's just a completely, you have to give up so much just to be free.
And you're answering by saying that. You're answering a question that a lot of people have. You know, people say, well, if somebody's in an abusive relationship, why don't they just leave? And I think you just told us.
Yeah, I had that. I've had that judgment so much and, you know, but then when you leave, it's, you know, why did you leave that? I had a lot of people that were really negative to me that I left, you know. So the question of, you know, why don't they leave it's such a complex answer. There's so many things that make you stay. You get trapped. It's really hard. It's really hard to leave. But once you do, it's the best thing ever.
Well, thanks for being willing to talk.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
It's amazing to see all these shirts up. Because I come from a long line of abuse, and seeing these shirts show me that there are other people out there that struggle with this every day, and we need to make it aware to everyone that it's there.
Now, I have to tell you that the Clothesline Project is very meaningful to me. For 2 days last week, when I opened the door to my office, I was met by a maze of T-shirts spread out across the entire floor, from the door to my desk. Both days began as I ventured forth, tiptoeing around images of broken hearts, shattered designs, and pain-filled and impassioned language. I entered into an ever-powerful realm of bold commitments that claimed a rightful place in the quest to end violence against women and children. Both days, as I found my first step across the floor, it took my breath away. By the second step, the events of my life faded as I focused closely on the descriptions of violence that lay around me. Interwoven within descriptions of physical abuse and emotional battering, physical assault, stalking, terrorizing, torture, sexual abuse, and rape were the strands of courageous voices speaking truth to power. Religion won't protect us. Politicians won't protect us. Learning to fight back won't protect us. Writing and speaking our truths won't protect us. Opening shelters and clinics and providing crisis hotlines won't protect us. Changing laws won't protect us. Clothesline projects won't protect us. All of these measures are responses to the problem. They are absolutely meaningful, and they need to be supported, but none of them will protect us. The only thing that will protect us is a cultural shift, a global transformation. One last note about the power of the Clothesline Project, the commitment to ending violence against women and children, and the dedication to equality. Studies are now surfacing that present all of these issues as critical social markers as we move forward in human history. In 2010, a study funded by the Urban Institute measured both economic success and human well-being. The results showed a clear connection between the status of women and the related status of children as the most powerful predictor of economic competitiveness, the quality of life, and the sustainability of economic successes and long-term well-being. In simpler terms, it means this: women's equality means a better life and a healthier, safer world for everyone, each of us, all of us, every one of us, because that's what it means to be equal.
The Women's Studies and Lives in Transition programs followed up on the Clothesline Project by preparing and presenting two performances of the Vagina Monologues, raising money to assist victims of domestic violence.
Both projects were a great success this year. It's our second year of doing them, so I've got a year of practice, and my students were really excited, as they were last year, to get them done as well.
Now, you raised a fair amount of money with the Vagina Monologues from admissions. Where does that money go?
All money is donated to organizations that work to end violence against women and girls, and at least 10% of the proceeds will go back to V-Day, which is Eve Ensler's organization that sponsors the Vagina Monologues.
Now, I know people will have come to one or both of those events and walked away with some knowledge they didn't have before and probably moved emotionally as well. What can they do with that now that they have that extra knowledge, now that they have that investment in stopping violence against women? What can they as individuals do from this point on?
I invite them to have conversations with those around them when it comes to violence. It's been such a taboo subject for so long, and that's why the Clothesline Project and the Vagina Monologues are so amazing, because they bring this taboo subject of violence and women's sexuality into a regular, normal conversation. And so if we want to stop violence against women, we have to first create equality. And we also need to bring up these subjects in everyday conversation so that they're not silenced. Bad things can only continue to happen when good people allow them to continue. So I invite folks to have these conversations with people. And when people are talking about a woman who's abused and someone says, well, obviously she wanted to stay there, otherwise she wouldn't have, or she liked to be hit,
I invite people to say, well, why does he batter? And so just change the discussion. Have those hard, difficult discussions with those around you. And that's the most challenging thing you can do. It might be easy to send $10 to the Women's Resource Center. It's much more difficult to have an uncomfortable conversation with those around you and know that talking about something doesn't kill you. It makes you uncomfortable. But it also emboldens you. It empowers you in a way because you realize that when you put fear into perspective, you can do amazing things.
If seeing these things inspired somebody to want to get involved in the Women's Studies program or to get involved in the Lives in Transition program, how would they go about doing that?
You just come up to the campus. You can call us, email us, or come up to the campus. Lives in Transition is offered spring and summer, fall, winter, and so is Women's Studies. So if you're interested in either, come up to the campus to the Lives in Transition room, which is the upstairs of Alder Hall, or you can email me at mstokes@clatsopcc.edu.
Well, congratulations on a pair of very moving and very successful events. Mindy Stokes, thank you very much.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Someone must have heard the noise and they dialed 911. And the cop who showed up at the door asked, is there a problem, son? And Jimmy smiled and said, no, sir, just a little fight, that's all. Hey, you know how it gets sometimes when you're laying down the law. Oh, no. So I pulled out my suitcase. I started packing up my clothes. And Jimmy said, now, Linda, where do you expect to go with those? I told him I have tried, but not an ounce of love survives. Then he grabbed my wrist and shouted, you're not leaving here alive. Nerve, I'll run. But Jim don't give up easily, so I intend to buy a gun. He will never see the way he treats me as a crime. Somebody ought to lock him up, but I'm the one who's done the time. He says a man's home.
Thank you for listening. Please join us again on the third Monday of next month as we continue to explore the human beat.